Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Good evening, everyone. We have a lot to get to on this bizarre day in politics when Mike Pence did something entirely uncharacteristic for him and really for any Republican politician. He stood up to Donald Trump for the second time, including Insurrection Day, while his party sided 1,000% with January 6th insurrectionists over Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. But first, America, I want to take you on a little trip. Now, don't worry. We're not going to go far. We're just going to head over to Ohio for a bit so that I can introduce you to Josh Mandel, the former state treasurer and perpetual Senate candidate. If you really want to understand today's Republican Party, you need to understand this guy. Josh Mandel is currently the front runner in Ohio's crowded Republican Senate primary field, which is filled with MAGA cult devotees, including faux populist, venture capitalist and poor white people literary puncher J.D. Vance, plus former state party chair Jane Timken. This is Mandel's third try at becoming a United States senator. The first time he lost to Sherrod Brown and was called out by PolitiFact for his campaign's casual relationship with the truth, which is a nice way of saying they lie. That is bad enough. But Mandel goes even further. There is frankly nobody more shamelessly and pathetically devoted to Donald Trump, the Goblin King, than Josh Mandel. Because, let's face it, you're not going to go anywhere in the Republican Party unless you pledge undying fealty to Trump's big lie.
Did President Biden win the constitutional majority in the Electoral College? If yes, how definitive is your conclusion? If no, please explain which states you think are in dispute and why.
I do not believe he won. I think Trump won. I think Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, all of those states need to be fully investigated, and none of them have.
Okay, you see, a year ago, what he just said would have been considered unhinged. Today, it is the Republican mantra. You cannot get past go without bowing down to a guy who was legitimately rejected by 81 million American voters. Today, the Republican National Committee, the organization currently paying the ex-president's legal bills, made it official by rebuking two of their own. The RNC censured Representatives Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois because of their work investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. The committee will no longer support them, claiming that their behavior is destructive. So to review, the official arm of the National Republican Party is punishing two diehard conservative Republicans because they dare to defend the Constitution. Okay, that's bad, really bad. But you know what's worse? The way the party defended the move. In their censure, the RNC described the two members as participating in a Democrat-led persecution of ordinary citizens engaged in legitimate political discourse. Now, did you hear that? What you just heard would be more at home in the old Soviet Union, where they used to like cut Kremlin foes out of historical photos. Republicans, as a party, are now officially trying to memory hole the truth. It's like they're the Will Smith character from Men in Black with the flashy thing, trying to delete January 6th from our collective memory by rewriting the violence and the brutality that we all saw with our own two eyes as just plain old legitimate political discourse. This right here, what you're going to see now, is legitimate discourse to today's Republican Party. Yes, legitimate political discourse. And these ordinary citizens beating a police officer, that too is legitimate discourse to them as well. And in trying to pull off this version of their overall obsession with erasing history, Republicans messed around and attacked a man who is currently literally on military duty defending this country. That is right. Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who is a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force, is currently deployed with the National Guard. But because he dares to speak the truth, he is bad, while a person who lies is good. Today, another Republican, former Vice President Mike Pence, who the legitimate discoursers wanted to hang on January 6th, went further than he ever has in also telling the truth.
President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president. Under the Constitution, I had no right to change the outcome of our election. And the truth is, there's more at stake than our party or political fortunes. Men and women, if we lose faith in the Constitution, we won't just lose elections. We'll lose our country.
Okay, that happens to be true. And in saying that, Mike Pence all but guarantees Republicans will demonize him even further while embracing liars and charlatans like Josh Mandel. Joining me now is Matthew Dowd, founder of Country Over Party and a brand new MSNBC political analyst, and Maria Teresa Kumar, president and CEO of Voto Latino. Matthew, it's pretty stunning. I was shocked to hear Mike Pence actually say something so bluntly true. But here's, let me further that by adding what Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger had to say. Liz Cheney's response: the leaders of the Republican Party have made themselves willing hostages to a man who admits he tried to overturn a presidential election and suggests he would pardon January 6th defendants. I cannot recognize those in my party. I do not recognize those in my party who have abandoned the Constitution to embrace Donald Trump. History will be their judge. Adam Kinzinger, who again is deployed right now with the National Guard, said rather than focus their efforts on how to help the American people, my fellow Republicans have chosen to censure two lifelong members of the party for simply upholding their oaths of office. They've allowed conspiracy theories and toxic tribalism to hinder their ability to see clear-eyed. Your thoughts on all of this?
First of all, it's a neuralizer, the instrument from Men in Black.
That's it, the flashy thing.
Yes, yes, it's a neuralizer. We should talk movies. This is a movie that we're seeing unfolding. What I think is a good thing is that we're getting quite a bit of clarity about who the Republican Party is. And I think the days of blaming this on Donald Trump, we have to stop.
Yes.
I mean, Donald Trump is obviously a proximate cause, but Donald Trump was basically a reflection of who the Republican Party is as opposed to a cause of it. It's like saying Jefferson Davis was the reason why the state seceded. No, the state seceded because the people in the states wanted to secede, and he just happened to run the show after they seceded in this. And so to me, that's what's a reflection. And one of the things, having worked in the Republican Party in an ever so brief time that I did with George W. Bush, the RNC, these people, I keep this in mind, is the people most in touch with who the Republican Party base is. The RNC is closest to the Republican Party activists and the Republican Party grassroots. So when they put out a statement like that, they're a complete reflection of the Republican Party base in this. And the unicorns like Adam Kinzinger and what Mitt Romney said today and Liz Cheney, they are the complete exception to the rule in this. And you know you're in a bad place when the person today who has moral fiber in the Republican Party is Mike Pence. You know you've scraped the bottom of the barrel of integrity, because I wish he had had the courage to have done this a year and 3 months ago when they were in the middle of this organization of the coup.
Yeah. And he didn't. And he did. Right. But he also did the right thing. He did it twice. He did the right thing on January 6th. He's doing the right thing now. Let's see how long he can hold that up and whether it'll be on Lindsey Graham time where 48 hours from now he goes, oh, wait a minute, I didn't mean any of that. Trump is God. And let me bring you in, Maria, because, I think it's an important point about the RNC. Right. Because and I can't remember who it is from the Lincoln Project that says the sound that you can hear distantly is the sound of Republican souls leaving their bodies. Right. So the RNC, whose souls have gone, right? they've gone. On January 6th, they also condemned the violence. They condemned it too. They put out a statement saying, wrong. This was wrong. This was a wrong thing to do. The members of the Republican National Committee strongly condemned the violence in and around the United States Capitol building today in Washington, D.C. Violent scenes that we've witnessed do not represent acts of patriotism, but an attack on our country and its founding principles. Fast forward to today, they're saying the people who are wrong are Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney for engaging in an investigation of it. And then the chairwoman, Ronna Romney McDaniel, maybe realizing how bizarre they sound, then she tries to kind of soften it. You know, she keeps the Romney out, but she is a Romney, and says, the violence maybe not so great. It just, but she's already said it. So what do you make of all this?
Let's remind our audience what happened on the on that day, on January 6th. There's 724 individuals right now that have arrest warrants. They're actually getting processed because they violated and tried to create a coup. If you talk to members of Congress, if you talk to our colleagues in the press, they have PTSD from that day. You can't hide that there is, we have a paper trail. So the RNC right now is trying to change what the American people witnessed. I remember the day after January 6th. I had to explain to my daughter what was happening live. And then I went on a Zoom call here. Our teachers were talking about it. She was in third grade. Can you imagine talking about what we were witnessing to children? And this is what I recognize that, you know, Pence is now doing the right thing. I agree with Matt. He had done it 13 months ago. But the fact that he is actually breaking with the Republican Party's base, and so is Mitt Romney, and so is Kissinger, and so is, well, not Kissinger, and so Kinzinger. Kinzinger. It demonstrates that there is a fraction of the Republican Party that can splinter off, and that there are a lot of moderate Republicans that need a place to live. And it allows them to not only bear witness, but actually demonstrate to the broad Republican base that not everybody has to be party of Trump.
Yeah, and this is absolutely
a lot. And this is a long shot, but it also creates that possibility of a truly third party. And that's going to be a lot harder because there's a party structure. But what allows for this to happen is that the democratization of our democracy hasn't happened because of party states, but it's because of individual donors and fundraising. So there might be an opportunity, again, to splinter the Republican Party where a lot of individuals actually start paying into the Liz Cheney view worldview.
We shall see. You know, and Matthew, this is a party that collectively condemned Colin Kaepernick for kneeling even after talking with a member of the military to protest police violence. They said that was un-American. They condemn Black Lives Matter. They don't think that's legitimate political discourse for people to march against police violence. So they're very particular about what they condemn, right? They're trying to erase things like the actual history of the country. That's not right. You can't teach anything about history. So they're not quite, you know, consistent with these things they're saying. But I want both of you to comment on the fact that they're doing this for a reason. As you said, RNC gets what they're dealing with. And demographically, there are fewer and fewer white, particularly white rural and white non-college voters. They are a diminishing number. And Republicans are overperforming with that smaller and smaller number. And it's a dramatic decline. Let's put up these Pew numbers. The decline is dramatic. That's what they're dealing with. They're trying to overperform with a shrinking electorate.
Well, I think they're trying to do two things, Joy, simultaneously. They're trying to not only overperform with a shrinking part of the electorate, but they're also, as you know, through state after state after state, they're trying to pass laws so that the composition of the electorate more closely matches what they want, which is not a diversity of the country and not what the majority is. But they're trying to pass laws so it restricts the vote, so people have harder access that they don't want to vote, so that then they have a better ability to win elections. As you brought up Colin Kaepernick, and you know, I wrote this column today, the GOP today, I'll bring NFL, reminds me of the conversations that are going on around the Rooney Rule. And the Rooney Rule was established 19 years ago, this whole Brian Flores thing, that you have to at least interview a diverse coach, a coach of color, because right now there's only one African-American coach. The Republicans talk about democracy and the Constitution like the Rooney Rule. They basically just want to check the box and do everything opposite of what the Rooney Rule is. They want to say, I'm for democracy and Constitution, but don't look over here because I'm doing everything possible to hurt democracy and hurt the Constitution.
Yeah. Very quickly, Maria Teresa Kumar, it's about the demographic that you work with. Very quickly. Go ahead.
It's about the demographics. And we have to look at this not in the collective. Not only are they trying to talk about critical race theory when it's not a thing, they're trying to stack school boards. They're trying to change the rules of a verified election. And they're also starting to burn books. I mean, collectively, we are feeling like we're living more of the last century than the 21st century.
And it's really a Bolshevik
single American to really pay attention. And we need to demand voting rights. We need to demand that what is happening very much on our watch, it stops. Yep. And that one way to do that is by voting them out.
Indeed, it's a sort of Bolshevikization of the Republican Party. It is a bizarre time to be alive. Matthew Dowd, Maria Teresa Kumar, have a great weekend. Thank y'all both very much. Up next on The Readout, police in Minneapolis have serious questions to answer after using a no-knock warrant to enter a home where they quickly killed a 22-year-old Black man. Plus, the Winter Games begin in China amid a backdrop of human rights abuses and political tension. I'll be joined by Apollo Ono, who has 8 Winter Olympic medals, more than any other American. The readout continues after this.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. For anyone unfamiliar with the Constitution, that is the Fourth Amendment. The men who wrote the Constitution included it specifically to remove what the British government and military had, namely the right to enter and search any Briton's home at will. Now, while we no longer have to fear the redcoats breaking down our doors, we still have to worry about authorities busting in and maybe killing us, especially those of us, let's face it, who are black or brown, due to the issue of no-knock warrants by law enforcement. We've seen too many examples of no-knock warrants ending in the loss of innocent lives. Just 2 days ago, Minneapolis police used a no-knock warrant to enter an apartment and within 9 seconds ended the life of a 22-year-old black man named Amir Locke. Police have released the body cam video, and we will just warn you, it is disturbing. So I just want to warn you, the footage is graphic, so just take a few seconds to prepare or to look away if you need to. Police also blurred the faces of the officers involved.
Police search warrant!
Amir Locke, wrapped in a blanket on the couch, was shot 3 times. Locke was not even one of the people the police were searching for. He didn't even live there. He was holding a gun, but while the police claim it was pointed at one of the officers, the footage does not make that clear. The shooting is the latest example of violence involving the Minneapolis Police Department, which has been under intense national scrutiny following the death of George Floyd in 2020. And joining me now is Maya Wiley, former assistant U.S. attorney and an MSNBC legal analyst, and Ralph Godby, former Detroit police chief, who is currently running for Congress in Michigan. Thank you both for being here. I do want to note that tonight the mayor, Jacob Fry, has announced that he's halting no-knock warrants, saying he's going to work with national experts to review and suggest revisions to the department's policy. Just want to throw that out there. But I want to go to you first, Maya. The reason I wanted to start tonight by reading the Fourth Amendment is that it feels that the Fourth Amendment might just be a thing on paper that sounds really good when I read it on television. I don't understand how we have a Fourth Amendment if police can do what we just saw in that video when a man is asleep on the couch, bust in and shoot him in 9 seconds. Is the Fourth Amendment a dead letter at this point?
Well, it's not a dead letter, but it is a constitutional provision that has had the Supreme Court create many, many exceptions to it. And depending on your point of view, shooting a lot of holes in it, because essentially what the Supreme Court has said is, well, you know, yes, you generally have to have a warrant, but here are all the exceptions to when you don't even have to have a warrant. And that means that even in states, for example, that have laws that say, you know, you really should get a warrant before you go, and we will actually feel very uncomfortable about no-knock warrants, that if there is what Justice Stevens in 1995 called exigent circumstances, then it becomes a reasonable standard. That means you read and you read it out loud, you know, probable cause. Reasonableness is less than probable cause. Reasonableness is, we think it's dangerous. We think they're going to dispose of evidence. So even in these other situations, there can be exceptions. It's why elections matter. It's why it matters how we have a conversation about what kinds of laws we need and what keeps us safe. And I just want to make one point that often gets missed when we're talking about no-knock warrants. What, 94 civilians, regular folks, were killed because of no-knock warrants between 2010 and 2016, I think, were the years. 13, in addition to those, 13 police officers were killed. So we ignore that it also endangers police officers to create the conditions that create more violence. And so if we care about creating more safety for everyone, including our law enforcement officers, we have to take a serious look at these practices and policies.
Yeah, I mean, Chief Bobby, I cannot imagine being asleep, you know, on the couch. And, you know, there are a lot of people, look, I wouldn't do it, but there are a lot of people who sleep with a firearm in the, either under their bed or near. That, you know, there are people who do that. So I can't explain that. That's what some people do, whatever. But I cannot imagine being asleep on the couch or in my bed and having any sound of somebody busting through the door and then having somebody come in and not and react in a way. How do they think people are going to react? I don't understand what this has done. I think about Breonna Taylor, Tatiana Jefferson, Botham John. You can go on and on and on. They're killing people in their homes. How is this in any way a good idea?
Joy, it absolutely is not. Maya Wiley did a wonderful job setting the table. Unfortunately, what catapulted me into the chief's position was Ayanna Stanley Jones, a name that's missing from your list. She was killed when Detroit police were executing a search at an arrest warrant for a murderer, and a 9-year-old ends up dead. My predecessor was relieved of his duty after that, and I became chief of police. So I'm super sensitive to this, and the no-knock warrant has to be a relic of the past. And it's amazing to me as well that you don't have Second Amendment zealots standing up for Philando Castile, standing up for Amir Locke. They legally possess weapons, yet they are remarkably absent in these conversations when there are Black persons armed legally and killed by the police. So this is just another example of just the inequities we have in our criminal justice system and what we have to fix.
Let me ask you a question, because so we know that the officer who actually fired the shots, his name is Mark Hanneman. He has been the subject of 3 complaints since his hiring in 2015. All were closed without discipline. There's no listing on what the allegations were. He's presently on paid administrative leave in accordance with department policy. But I wonder, number one, just to ask you, Chief Gobby, how do police chiefs and the sergeants, et cetera, decide who gets to be on these no-knock warrant complaints for no-knock warrants? Who gets to be on the team? Because you would think you would only want the most pristine officers who have the best good sense there. And yes. Number two, what are officers even trained to understand about the Fourth Amendment?
Well, it depends on the agency, because some agencies, your seniority will dictate what unit you get to work in. Typically in a SWAT team or a special response team, there's a training mechanism that goes with that. And there should be a strong assessment to use of force issues with officers that are assigned to those specialized units. I can't say for certain that there are, because there are 18,000 different police departments across this country, each one of them having their own chief, their own governing bodies. And that's why there has to be some type of national standards when it comes to things such as urgent seizure, because you can go, I mean, well, look in the Minneapolis area. You have Amir Locke. You have Philando Castile. You have George Floyd. You look at Breonna Taylor. So when you look at all these different incidences, and they're, unfortunately, they're Black people that end up dead, there has to be a national standard, and we cannot continue 100%. To allow it to be parsed out to 18,000 different chiefs.
We need a whole new way of looking and thinking about policing in this country. Just we need to start over and come up with something new. Maya Wiley, Ralph Godby, thank you both very much. Appreciate it. Still ahead, the Winter Olympics begin in a swirl of celebrations and controversies. We're talking boycotts, concerns about human rights abuses, growing global tensions, and don't forget COVID. 8-time Olympic speed skating medalist Apollo Anton Ono joins me to talk about all of that and more next on The Readout. The Winter Olympics kicked off today in Beijing with a grand spectacle that served as quite a distraction from China's human rights record amid a backdrop of international conflict and COVID. The crowd was limited due to China's strict COVID rules. The government is barring most ordinary citizens from attending. Although Russian President Vladimir Putin was in attendance, sitting expressionless and at one point closing his eyes as Ukraine's delegation was introduced. Hours earlier, Putin met with Chinese President Xi Jinping. A not at all subtle show of autocrat unity in the face of pressure from the West. At the ceremony, a Uyghur cross-country skier served as one of the final torchbearers for China, seemingly intended as a middle finger to criticism of China's human rights abuses. The U.S. is staging a diplomatic boycott of the Games, along with several other nations, over a number of human rights concerns. The U.S. in particular cited China's detention and abuse of the Muslim minority Uyghurs, which the U.S. has called a genocide, as well as crackdowns on pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. Meanwhile, Team USA marched in today's parade of nations, while here at home, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reiterated a warning for athletes.
As I wish the athletes well, I do not encourage them to speak out against the Chinese government there because I fear for their safety if they do.
Joining me now is Apollo Anton Ono, 8-time Olympic medalist, author, and entrepreneur. Thank you so much for being here. It's really great to meet you via the television. And it's great to have you here, particularly today, because, you know, the Olympics is open. It is a much, much more low-key sort of Olympic opening. And China is a very particularly troubling sort of venue, right, given their human rights issues. You know, just as somebody who's competed at a very, very high level, how do you think that all of that controversy on top of the pressure to perform impacts these athletes?
Well, I think it would be remiss if you didn't acknowledge the fact that there are a lot of both outsized events and things that are unlike any normalized event that has happened in the past. The Olympics has always been a place where we try to separate sport from politics. We try to kind of corral and unify behind Team USA in a way that we can cheer those athletes on, to see them be their best and rip open the curtain, so to speak, of all those years of hard work and training. But we also live in a time where some of these issues are sensitive and they're real, and they affect athletes who either are biracial, triracial, et cetera, and they have opinions and thoughts about these things. So this is an unprecedented time, right? The rise of social media, the access to information and misinformation is challenging. And so, you know, I look at this from a zoomed out perspective. I deeply, obviously, believe in the Olympic movement to bring all humans together, to bring people together to compete and to parlay and to participate in these sports in an effort to showcase what the human spirit can actually overcome and be. But again, this is real life. These are real issues. Yeah. These are real topics. And there's a lot of discussion that is happening that is ongoing, obviously.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, you competed in 2002 in Salt Lake City, in 2006 in Turin, 2010 in Vancouver. So you medaled like crazy in all of these. So you've obviously competed at a really high level. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because you have a lot of athletes that are dealing with a lot of the stresses back home. You have people who are dealing with a very toxic racial climate in this country. Some of those athletes are over there. I mean, you reached out to Naomi Osaka, dealing with the things that she was dealing with in terms of the pressure on her and the racialized pressure on her. COVID has exacted a real toll mentally and emotionally on everyone, but especially on younger people. What do you make of how these athletes are responding to that? Because I know the competition makes that even harder.
There's definitely an added pressure and a layer of context here that has never existed. But I do think that the athletes are trained properly. Psychologically, they have this opening now to speak out in ways that perhaps weren't really characterized as being acceptable 10 years ago, right? The fact to be able to talk about mental health in a way that in the past seemed weak or unacceptable, today they're really being embraced with open arms. So that's a good thing, right? We can now recognize the athlete as being this superhuman figure, but also being human at the same time, who shares the same type of insecurities and self-doubts and fears, and also being in the prison of her own 2 years as everyone else has faced. And so the past 2 years has been unprecedented. Whether you agree with certain mandates or not, it has taken a toll on this country and around the world. The athletes are truly no different. And so the one point here that I would make is that we still look to these athletes as incredibly representative of the best versions of ourselves. And so that's what I hope to see from these Olympic athletes as they walked, by the way, into an opening ceremony that had no fans. There was no families there. This was the first time this had happened. We had seen some similar instances back in Tokyo during the Summer Games, but these are unique times. I can only imagine what that must have felt or not felt for those athletes walking in. But rest assured, their mission to be their best has never wavered. And they want to go there to represent themselves and, I believe, Team USA to the best possible capability. And so wiping away the noise and the ancillary effect of what is actually happening, and it's hard to do, what remains is this deeply unifying opportunity for, I think, all of us as Americans to say, go there, be your best, regardless of outcome. We will be here supporting you in every instance to hold you to stand up as tall as possible.
Apollo Anton Ohno, thank you very much. This is an uplifting message on this Friday. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you. All right, up next. Thank you. Jobs, jobs, and more jobs. President Biden takes a victory lap as the latest jobs report shows yet another month of remarkably strong growth despite the Omicron surge. Sorry, Fox and friends. We'll be right back.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Stay up to date on the biggest issues of the day with the MSNBC Daily Newsletter. Each morning, you'll get analysis by experts you trust, video highlights from your favorite shows.
2024 is now truly the most important election in the history of our country.
Previews of our podcasts and documentaries, plus written perspectives from the newsmakers themselves, all sent directly to your inbox each morning. Get the best of MSNBC all in one place. Sign up for MSNBC Daily at MSNBC.com.
There is great news for the economy today with a much better than expected jobs report. The economy added 467,000 jobs in January, despite the spread of Omicron. Now, of course, minutes before the report was released, the kids on the comfy couch got themselves all geeked up for shade.
So, Peter, how will the White House spin this? If it is true, as ADP, the paycheck cutter, is suggesting it could be a loss of 300,000 jobs. How is the White House going to put a happy face on that?
If past is precedent, and usually at the White House it is, he'll come out and he'll say this is just proof that people need to get vaccinated.
So, Peter, what vaccine do you get for job loss?
I think it's in the trials still.
Okay, good. Yeah, Pfizer's working on it.
Wah, wah. Now, we've come to expect that foolishness from Fox News, but there is something else happening on your television screens these days that is more curious. Have you noticed the parade of far-right figures, MAGA liars, Tea Partiers, coup plotters, and extremists appearing on wholesome, family-friendly, reputation-redeeming reality shows? You know, the ones with random celebrity judges, dramatic music, and hosts that ask tough questions like, was it hard learning to dance? Tuckums. The most recent example is coup insider Rudy Giuliani reportedly appearing on Fox's The Masked Singer. There was also that time ABC's Dancing with the Stars made y'all sit through weeks of professional liar Sean Spicer's clunky dance moves after MAGA stans kept voting for him. And who can forget Sarah Palin, who has starred in and appeared in multiple reality TV shows along with her family, despite years of spewing rhetoric like this.
Barack Obama's friends from Chicago. Our opponent is someone who sees America as imperfect enough to pal around with terrorists who targeted their own country.
Barack Hussein Obama as a candidate. Obviously, if there's something there that the president doesn't want people to see on that birth certificate that, you know, he sees going to great lengths to make sure that it isn't shown.
Since our president won't say it, since he still hasn't called off the dogs, we'll say it. Police officers and first responders all across this great land, we got your back. We salute you.
Oh, sorry. The timbre of her voice broke my ear drum. Yes, yes. That was her actually calling Black Lives Matter protesters dogs. I am joined now by Dean Obadala, host of the Dean Obadala Show on SiriusXM and columnist for MSNBC Daily. Dean, what is going on here? It's like all of these network shows are like, who can we get to dance? Oh, Tucker, some MAGA people, some people from Trump world. I don't understand that because, you know, back when I was growing up, maybe I'm just too old, it was always that you wanted to have the most unifying, broadly beloved people in those kinds of shows. But not now. It's like if you work for Trump, you're like first in line.
Well, I think Rudy Giuliani was on this Bard Singer. I think that's the next episode of that. This is, look, I don't like Trump, but if he's on the Indicted Singer, I'm happy. Or the Imprisoned reality show where we do a reality show where Trump is in prison. We watch him there. That's fine. Look, it's just like Les Moonves said during the 2016 campaign, where he said the idea, and I'll look at it, Trump might not be good for America, but it's damn good for CBS. The money's CBS. Rolling in, and this is fun. So that was for CBS, but let's be honest, they're a for-profit business. They've made a decision that Rudy Giuliani, mascara or not running, on The Masked Singer is a good idea, or Sarah Palin shrieking on another TV show is a good idea, or Sean Spicer. It's a business decision, and we got to live with it. This is the reality that we've gone, political theater, gone to the extreme, and they're normalizing really, really bad people.
And this is the thing. I want to play really quick. This is India Ari, and she talked. She really went off on Spotify, and she also has released a supercut of Joe Rogan dropping N bombs. This was an exclusive clip from the Tamron Hall show today. Take a look.
I decided to pull it, my music and my podcast from Spotify, but it's dual. It's one is the Joe Rogan conversation, and for me, his language around race and some of the things I've seen and heard. But also, coupled with that, there is the treatment of artists by Spotify. And so artists are underpaid, and Joe Rogan gets paid all this money. And it's hard for me to, these days, just sit back and go, oh, well, that's how it goes.
I mean, in the case of Joe Rogan, the racism stuff is bad, but the COVID stuff is worse. I mean, this is dangerous stuff, and people really listen to him. What is it about sort of like the most jerky you can be being the most lucrative, even if it's like dangerous stuff like vaccine, denialism and that sort of thing?
White nationalism, lying about COVID vaccine. He'll be co-hosting with Tucker Carlson, I think, in the near future. Look, this sells. This is the reality of what we're dealing with. I love that India is using her celebrity for really good here, elevating that musicians are getting underpaid, and they're using our money to give $100 million to Joe Rogan, who spewed racist stuff, COVID questionable lies. And Joe Rogan's defense is, I don't prepare, so don't blame me. Hey, look, if you're not going to prepare, then talk about things like Ted Lasso, okay? Talk about Cobra Kai, not deadly pandemic stuff, because people are going to die when you do that. And like the Foxers, he doesn't seem to care. I don't think he's as sinister as the Foxers, but he really doesn't care. Yeah. He's getting his paycheck and he's happy with it. That's it.
He's getting paid. Lauren Boebert, let's move on to Lauren Boebert. She says the Constitution is not evolving. To say it evolves is spitting in the face of every one of our founders. Your thoughts?
I think that it's unfair to require a member of Congress to know the Constitution because, Joy, she's busy with her anti-Muslim bigotry. She's busy with inciting the January 6th terrorist attack and getting arrested by the cops. We've talked about her mugshots before and everything else. So to require her to know the Constitution is a bit too much.
It's too much.
Of course, or maybe, Joy, she wants to go back to the early days when only white men who owned property could actually vote. Maybe she likes that. Maybe she wants the fugitive slave clause to be back in the Constitution like it was in the original. I can't tell you, but she hangs around with the white nationalist 3%ers. She literally does. So this is what we're coming from.
Let's go on to Jeff Bezos. This is an interesting thing. So he is having to dismantle part of an historic bridge so that Jeff Bezos can have his massive yacht be able to pass through it. I feel like this guy is going through a midlife crisis. I mean, let's just put this picture up. This is Jeff Bezos on one side. I think he thinks he's Kanye. And then on the right is his penis rocket. I feel like these are two pictures of really the same phenomenon happening. And it is, you're, I'm going to just let you talk.
Well, Joy, I've taken intro to psych in college a long time ago, so clearly there's a midlife crisis going on. There's a penis replacement theory, I think it's called, with the bridge going up, so his shit can go through. Hey, Bezos, I got a bridge in New York where we live. We're never bringing the bridge up for you, buddy, okay? 59th Street Bridge is going nowhere for Jeff Bezos. I'd love the New York cops to be like, we're going to raise the bridge for this jackass? Not going to happen. So Bezos is going through some tough times there.
Just literally stop raising the price of Amazon Prime, deliver stuff on time, right? And pay your workers like a decent wage. Like, is that too hard? Come on, man. No, you're not Kanye.
Use the rocket to get the package to me on time. How about that, Jeff? Can you fly the rocket?
He only went to near space.
And get the package
to
on
space.
Time?
He went to near space. He can't do all of that. Dino Batala, thank you. Up next.
Thanks,
up next.
Boy.
Appreciate you. A special edition of Who Won the Week? Don't move a muscle. We'll be right back. Today is the birthday of Rosa Parks, the civil rights icon who took a stand by sitting, helping to launch a civil rights movement that transformed America. It's a name and a movement that conservatives are desperately trying to erase. Just this week in South Dakota, Governor Kristi Noem introduced legislation to ban fake critical race theory in schools. Florida is advancing bills that would ban making white people feel crummy about racism. And a school board in Georgia is banning 9 books, including Toni Morrison's pivotal The Bluest Eye. There is a reason that the right is scared of books like Morrison's. Literature and art have always been tools to fight oppression, tyranny, and fascism. Art shines a light during dark times and captures, in both provocative and haunting ways, exactly what we as a society are up against. Which is why this painting, titled Critical Race Theory, depicting the literal whitewashing and erasure of Black history, went viral, celebrated across the world in a matter of days. That is why my next guest, the artist of that painting, Jonathan Harris, is my choice for... Who won the week on this first week of Black History Month? It is not a competition, sir. You are the winner. Jonathan Harris, congratulations on winning the week and on this incredible, incredible piece of artwork. And I understand this is your first Black History Month interview. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Well, excellent. It's great to have you here. Talk about the origin of this piece and the reaction to it.
Yeah, so the idea came to me. I was just doing a lot of research about critical race theory and children not being able to learn certain things in school. And it opened something in me, and I wanted to create a piece of art to reflect the times. And that's what I did with this piece.
And you have now really, you know, as an artist, been exposed to people all over the world. You talked in this great piece that I just read in an art publication, which is actually published on my social media, if anybody wants to read it, that people all over the world in countries you hadn't even heard of are buying this piece. The first piece sold, and then it's sort of going everywhere, prints of it. Give us some examples of some places where prints of this piece have sold.
Oh, man, Australia, a lot of different places in Europe. A lot of different places in Africa, countries that I can't explain or pronounce, getting emails and text messages from people from all over the world because my phone number was on my website. And a lot of times I have to translate those messages, and it's mostly all positive, and I'm just glad that people are having that discussion.
Well, it's all positive for the most part, but there was a story that was in this piece that talked about one woman who came up to you and was remarking on the piece and didn't know who everyone in the piece was. Can you tell this story a little bit, that the woman in the front of the piece was misidentified by somebody who walked up to compliment you? Can you tell that story?
Yes. So during my last show at the Irwin House Gallery, the title of the show was Triptych. And the piece was on the wall, and the young lady, she seen the piece, and she said, you know, I see you have Martin Luther King and Malcolm X here, but why did you paint Aunt Jemima? And I still love her, and it just goes to show how we have to be accepting of people not knowing our history. And that just really, like, opened up my eyes to how people really don't even know our history. So that's what this piece is it's going to do.
What would you say to the Republicans who are, you know, around the country, you know, whipping up parents to use tip lines and, you know, bounties, et cetera, to try to force schools to get rid of books, pull books off of their shelves and not teach the true history of this country. What would you say to those Republicans if they would listen to you?
Well, that's very scary. The idea that somebody could just, you know, they don't feel comfortable about being the history, the accurate history being taught, and they can actually change that. That's scary. And if you're not being taught the truth, you're not being taught at all. And I just feel like if Ruby Bridges could, you know, walk into William France Academy Elementary, you know, in 1960 and have to deal with all she dealt with, then, you know, white kids should be able to have to learn about that. And that's the only way that, you know, anybody going to be better. You have to know about the past to be better in the present and future.
We're looking at some of your other work as you're talking. What inspires you to create art? Because, you know, art is it can be a part of the fight for the future. It can be a part of fighting against oppression. It's always been part of the language of change. What inspires you to create art?
Well, life inspires me first. I use life as a muse, and also Black people. I'm very passionate about my people. I love Black people, and I just want us really just to come together. So that's why I painted like one of the pieces you saw, My Brother's Keeper. And that's just showing, you know, a Black brother holding another Black brother up. When he's falling down, we don't have to step on each other. We could just love each other. So that's really just what I want to spread in my art, is love and support.
Detroit's own Jonathan Harris, we're so proud of you. Thank you very much. Everybody needs to collect what you create because it is brilliant. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here on this first week of Black History Month. Thank you. That is tonight's readout.
There comes a point when the right to vote requires a fight to vote. MSNBC Films presents Battleground Georgia, a story that explores the ugly history of voter suppression and how Georgia is leading the charge against it.
Something has to change. The old South is being replaced by the new South.
Battleground Georgia, part of the Turning Point documentary series from executive producer Trevor Noah, Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC.